Tiny City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 159. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
Hello, Peter.
Hi. So what are you thankful for?
I am thankful for my health, even though I have a bit of a cold this week.
That's okay.
I am thankful for my family. I am thankful that I have this wonderful show with you. And that we got to travel together. And that there's more travel on the horizon. Thankful for my girlfriend. Gosh, I don't know. Roof over my head, food in my mouth, you know, lots of food in my belly these days with the holiday. And I don't know. I have a lot of gratitude. I feel like I am a much more grateful person today than I have almost been in my entire life.
Wow.
So, and that it's a conscious thing, you know, it's a conscious daily thing that even when I'm pissy or I'm having a bad day, I can still stop and take a moment and reflect that what is good in my life. You know, I mean, I have a lot of loved ones in my life that are healthy and happy and secure. And so that's really all that matters to me. I mean, of course, I'd love to have buckets and buckets, buckets of more, because you can never have enough of whatever it is. I don't know, whatever it is. But I'm happy today. So I'm grateful.
Yeah. You stole the words right out of my mouth, though. That's what I was going to say. I'm thankful for being happy.
Yeah.
Because to put that puzzle together and to put all those pieces together takes a lot of different facets of life and a lot of different work, a lot of work in general. And I'm also thankful that I still feel. It's weird. There was a point in my life where when I would watch the news, it was kind of, I didn't do anything. I was kind of numb to it all. Or I would see somebody who maybe looked like they needed help, and I just wouldn't feel anything. And now it's all changed.
I feel,
and I like that. And it took a long time to chip away at layers and make sure that those sensitive parts are kind of hanging out. I know that sounds dirty, but it's not.
No, but I think it's the difference in the 20s and the 30s. I mean, you're just on the cusp. But I do think
just
it's
about to be 31 in a couple months here.
I know,
so.
But I'm saying, like, I think that is truly something different about those two generations. That the 20s are kind of a survival generation in a weird, weird way.
Well, you have to leave the nest, don't you? You have to learn how to flap your wings and try and fly. Maybe you're not flying, but you have to try.
And I think we take on a lot of tools that work for us at the time.
Sure.
With relationships, with job,
with booze, with pills, with sex, with food. It doesn't matter.
Other people. All of that. All of that crap. And
poison and the sugar all at once.
Exactly. And I think that we get to kind of leave that. I think we enter truly a new phase of maturity in our 30s. So if you're under 30, I'm not saying that you're not great and having a gay old great time. It is, but it just changes. It just evolves.
It does. And it used to be something I dreaded. It was actually, I dreaded it up until about 28. And then I realized that that's the Saturn return. And that's when things either look clear or look dim. You just have to keep staring out the window. Keep looking out the window. Yeah. It's gonna
I don't
clear
miss it at all.
Yeah, I dreaded it. But now that I'm on the other side of that and things are really starting to happen. I read an interesting quote today online, and I can't remember whose blog. It might have been Jerry Pournelle, who's He's just an amazing sci-fi writer, and he's been a computer writer and tech writer for years and years. We're talking like 30-plus years.
Yeah.
And I think it was on his blog. He either made a reference to it or somebody said something like, don't ever settle for... I'm paraphrasing this so poorly. But don't ever settle for anything that you don't consider to be the best. Because if you never settle for anything that's not the best, you will only get the best.
Yeah.
You know, don't ever accept something because that's just the way it is. Change it. And I think especially in our community, in the queer community, you have to get out there and fight. You have to get out there and do some shit. You have to do your work out there, and you have to do work for others, and you have to be selfless about what you're doing. Because
we just have to show up, you know, show up as GLBT or Q people, however you identify, you know, just like show up. This is why, like, kind of coming out is a big thing. This is to me why being visible, like being in the rooms, because once we get in the rooms, we create change, and it's a domino effect. And that's what I believe. I mean, I truly, truly believe it's a ripple effect. And being out is the most political and powerful statement that we can make. That's why I think the community is going to be so interesting in 5 or 10 years, and already is, because of this younger generation who feels more confident to come out and be vocal.
Who almost don't have to come out.
And almost don't have to come out. You know? And yet they do. And yet they still deal with being kicked out of their homes. They still deal with shame. They still deal with bigotry and hypocrisy and all of it.
And on the other side of the coin, there's people who are embraced lovingly by their parents the moment that they come, or young kids who are embraced lovingly. Young kids who understand their trans when they're young. That still blows my mind, to have a supportive, nurturing environment around them. And to think, you know, for the last 50, 60, 70 years, or maybe since the dawn of time, or in many cultures when homosexuality was so shunned and so tramped and tamped down, what's going to happen when these kids start so young and have this nurturing environment, and these flowers can really open up and just bloom in ways that even we aren't able to do because we didn't have it necessarily from the get-go.
You know, and it is interesting too, when we look back in time, I'm actually workshopping a new project, a new play with some fantastic artists here in Chicago through About Face, and also some fantastic artists in New York with the Tectonic Theater Project who created the Laramie Project. And it's a new play that's being developed about the life of Charlotte Cushman, who was a 19th century actress and was probably known as the greatest actress of her time. Now, we don't hear about her. You know, we hear about Sarah Bernhardt, or we hear about, you know, other great actresses, but we don't hear about her. And it's because she lived her life openly as a lesbian.
Really?
And what, quite,
was she a masculine
she was
lesbian?
Very, she was petite. She was short. I mean, she wasn't tall per se, but she was fairly masculine. She played all of the breeches roles. I mean, she supposedly was so captivating as Romeo that men and women both felt unusual watching her do it. She did Hamlet, and I mean, she really ran the gamut, and it's so fascinating to see. You know, even just going back to like Gertrude Stein. Of course, I'm going to know more women than I'm going to know men who perhaps passed as women. I don't know, but you know, Gertrude Stein of the world, the George Sand of the world, these great artistic heroines that some gained notoriety based on their time. Some were really just absolutely pushed into obscurity. And it is finding the old ghosts, you know, who set the tone. And it's truly, truly fascinating material. And to look back at our history and who these characters were, and present them again to, you know, to the public and to the community.
Have you ever seen a program? Now I'm starting to explore other cable channels, and folks, you knew this was going to head to TV at some point. Have you ever seen a program called Taboo? It comes on the National Geographic Channel.
I don't think so.
I highly recommend setting your DVR up for it.
Okay.
Because it by the given name of Taboo, it tends to explore fringe cultures, and obviously issues of sexuality come up all the time. And there was an amazing episode about concepts of gender. What is male? What is female? And this whole society has been studied for years and years and years in Armenia, where, and this has been going on, it's actually fading now, it's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years, where there are these women who are called sworn virgins. And by whatever happens, whatever socially happens in their situation, for instance, perhaps the father in the family died. Armenian is a very patriarchal society, heavily patriarchal. Yeah, I mean, you're the Balkans. That's what's going on there. Heavily patriarchal society. So given if the father died, then perhaps one of the young daughters would basically turn into a man.
Wow.
And would cut her hair and wear trousers and become the man of the house. And they showed just a few. There was a researcher on, and she's been doing her research in this for quite a while, and they introduced us to a couple of these women, and physically I mean, physically, we're talking these look like men, but to see in such a patriarchal society, a woman who was accepted sitting in the coffee house with the other men and chatting, but looked like a man, obviously visibly had to look like a man to fit in, but it's just something that they accept. And that's a very, very homophobic culture.
Well, and think about Iran, you know, which I watched this part of a documentary on Iran and talking about the gay and lesbian community and mm-hmm. obviously about all the people who have been hung, and some young men were hung just recently, mm-hmm. 17 and 18 years old. And they said that actually the government will pay for you to have a sex change. A gay man to have
really?
A sex change.
To move to the other
to
side.
To be a female, so therefore you wouldn't be killed or persecuted. So many of these gay men who probably don't self-identify as female, because sexuality and gender, as we know, are two entirely separate things, but are switching their genders, essentially castrating themselves and becoming women so they can be with men. It's so fascinating and so perverse. It's such a warped.
It's kind of a judgment call. I mean, then that's okay to make.
I think it is not. I'm not talking about people who, you know, are trans, mm-hmm. but as a man to not want to die. To be killed, perception that you have to lose your masculinity, because a gay man who identifies as male and identifies as gay mm-hmm. to be castrated and have a vagina
to have breasts
and turn into a woman, I think is a very warped and I just almost psychologically I don't know what it would be. I think it would be a very, very harsh. I mean, obviously, it's a harsh reality to live there and be
no doubt.
GLBT mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. But I'm shocked by that. I'm just shocked that the government would pay for it.
Yeah.
The government will pay for it here in the States, and it's, you know.
They won't do it. There, another part of this particular program that was dealing with gender was in India, and I believe a lot of South Asia, there is this concept of the third sex.
Sure.
And they're
That's
called
very Native American as well.
Right. In India, they're called Hijra. And they actually, and they're primarily males who are castrated and they become this third sex, and they become like shamans. And it's very similar in Native American cultures as well. But it was just so interesting to have the camera was really talking with this one individual who formed a family of other people, just like him, her, or other Hijra around them, and created this society. And they really do find family and all that. But it was just so fascinating that cultures that are so against homosexuality, are so anti-homosexual, can deal with a woman turning into a man.
Right.
Not a problem. Or B, someone becoming this third ubiquitous sex. And then it's perfectly accepted.
Right.
And to me, the line is so fine. It's such a gray area. It's like, why does he have to cut off his, you know, business in order to be accepted? Why can't he just be accepted without cutting it off? So it's
strange. It's hard for my brain to wrap around.
It is. But the more we do, and the more, like you said earlier, the more that we're there.
Yeah.
The more we can have these conversations and these dialogues, and we can reach out and we can get them. So, you know, I just it boggles my mind when I hear people talking about the problems that we have here.
Yeah.
And we do have problems here, and I'm not saying we don't have any problems in our community.
And a lot of ground to still gain.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm not disputing any of that, but that raising that consciousness just a little bit, and you know, that's why I like having this show, because we get to talk about these things, and that's what I'm thankful for, that we get to bring it to people, and we get to discover these little gems and nuggets or these horrible black holes in the world that we have to expose and we have to talk about. And
I'm
like being
also
here.
Very thankful for this thriving Chicago theater scene that
Absolutely.
We have. You know, I mean, this week, actually, tonight, I am going down to see this James Thiers, I think that's how you pronounce it, Umbrella down at Chicago Shakespeare, which is Charlie
Wonderful.
Chaplin's great-grandson or grandson, who's created this quite visual theater that's going to pass through town for a week, you know, this amazing troupe with no words, no language, that we can have that kind of experimental, avant-garde kind of visual theatrical experience. We can have this storefront fun camp, Helena Handbag that you're involved with, and enjoy a great show like Rudolph the Red-Hosed Reindeer during the holiday season. And then now we have this thriving, bustling, downtown scene of
who
big,
needs Broadway?
Big musicals. You know, we have Jersey Boys in towns and Wicked in town and all these big
Lion
shows. Phantoms
King,
in
Color
town.
Color Purple, Phantom, Vita.
And
all
then,
these.
You know, we have these amazing powerhouse regional theaters from Steppenwolf, who, God love them, they are still waiting to get their show open on Broadway because of IATSE and the stagehands in New York. But they've announced an extension now so they can make up the tickets because they were supposed to open this week. We have the world-class Goodman Theater and Looking Glass Theater. We have a great gay and lesbian theater company. There's just so much theater here. But what has also taken a foothold in our city is the show that spoofs all of that. Like the show that is that leaves no theatrical experience untoyed
poked
with.
And prodded.
Absolutely.
And
there's no one is too serious to make fun of. It doesn't matter if you're the hottest musical in town, Wicked, or if you are one of the most respected actresses, Cherry Jones, or if you're an icon who is traipsing along the boards of a theater house, such as a Kathleen Turner and and her turns that she's had in the past couple of years with Virginia Woolf. And so the show is Forbidden Broadway, and absolutely nothing is forbidden. They are going to spoof. And I had an opportunity to sit down with the Chicago cast that has been in a very successful production at the Royal George Theater. So I've got some cast members who are going to sing for us a little bit on the show today, just a little bit kicking us into the holidays here with our holiday weekend show.
Yep.
And also just talk to them about, you know, getting into these characters, how new material is added. This show has been going on for many, many, many years from when they were spoofing Annie and shows a long time ago from Evita to now. They're spoofing Wicked and the hottest shows of the day, Doubt, many shows that we've talked about and had interviews with. So that's going to be a bit of our show, a little bit of fun for you for this holiday weekend.
So happy Thanksgiving to everybody,
and we'll be back after this.
Listen very closely to the music of the night. The music of the most spellbinding experience in theater history. The music of the Phantom of the Opera. Now you are invited to fall captive to all the music, the power, and the passion. The Phantom of the Opera is now at the Cadillac Palace Theater through January 5th only. Get tickets at the box office, BroadwayInChicago.com, or call 312-902-1400. There's only one Phantom, and you've waited long enough.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweez!
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 19th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Four-time Tony Award-nominated actress Tova Feltsch, who plays the legendary Katharine Hepburn in the Chicago premiere of Tea at Five, playing November 19th through 23rd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, with a special gay night December 20th where you can meet Tova after the show. For tickets to Tea at Five, call 847-673-6300 or order online at northshorecenter.org.
Critics and audiences love Forbidden Broadway, the fall-down funny smash hit musical at the Royal George Theater. The Chicago Tribune raves it's the funniest, fastest 90 minutes in Chicago. Forbidden Broadway playing now through January 13th. For tickets, call 312-988-9000 or go to Ticketmaster.com.
About Face Theater presents Wedding Play, a world premiere written and directed by Eric Rosen. Set in the world of Chicago theater, Wedding Play blends mystery and comedy and might just be a confession to murder. Wedding Play is playing now at the Steppenwolf Garage. Call 312-335-1650 or visit AboutFaceTheater.com for tickets.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents Philip Barry's sparkling comedy of manners, The Philadelphia Story. Don't miss the staging of the beloved Katharine Hepburn film classic. The Philadelphia Story is playing now through January 6th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets and information, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org.
Are you depressed, repressed, undressed? Court Theater has the cure. They will have you feeling better in no time with gay playwright Joe Orton's sexy and ferociously playful farce, What the the Butler Saw. Sean Graney directs the provocative comedy now playing through December 9th. For tickets to What the Butler Saw, visit courttheater.org.
Altar Boys is a hilarious, wholly inspiring musical comedy about five small town boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham, trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. The Tribune says this production is brilliant. You'll laugh your socks off. Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Theater. Visit alterboyschicago.com.
Don't miss the musical event of the season, Ella, playing at Northlight Theater through January 6th. Set your feet tapping with Ella, the swinging new musical about jazz legend Ella Fitzgerald, featuring memories from her extraordinary life and more than 20 of her greatest hits. For information or to purchase tickets to Ella, visit northlight.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Perhaps fashion's greatest mystery. What makes a big, strong man say, I think I need a new fur coat?
I don't know.
The very height of political incorrectness. Nothing says, I could give a rat's rear end like a man in a floor-length chinchilla.
I'm taking no prisoners.
A look that's half street pimp, half Aunt Esther, and full-on fur-tastic. Sure, it's gauche, but you don't spend more on your coat than your car, not to be noticed.
But look at me.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer, because it takes a real man to wear a lady's coat.
Mr. Male Fur Coat.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
Openly gay U.S. Representative Barney Frank recently endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for president. Frank will serve as one of Clinton's economic advisors.
A Baltimore federal judge recently unsealed the financial records of Reverend Fred Phelps Westboro Baptist Church, and the records don't really indicate what funds the anti-gay group, enabling it to frequently travel the country. The group protested the funeral of a fallen Marine, and the soldier's family was recently awarded nearly $11 million in damages.
The City Council of Toledo, Ohio, passed an ordinance that allows gay and unmarried couples to register as domestic partners. The ordinance passed 10-2 and was created to help employers that offer domestic partner benefits to verify relationships.
A new report released by Florida's health department suggests that the state hasn't made much progress in lowering HIV infection rates among gay men. The state has one of the highest infection rates in the United States. The report states that one in every 22 gay and bisexual men in Florida are HIV positive. Rates in southern Florida are even higher.
Actor Daniel Radcliffe, a.k.a. Harry Potter, recently revealed his reaction to author J.K. Rowling's announcement that Hogwarts school headmaster Dumbledore was gay. Quote, J.K. Rowling is an incredibly intelligent woman, Radcliffe said. She can't have thought for a moment that that would go down well in the Bible Belt of America, but she put it brilliantly herself. He's my character and I can do with him what I want, which I think is fair enough.
Well, boy, George, he was recently charged with false imprisonment. The charges stuck. A 28-year-old Norwegian escort claims the pop singer chained him to a wall in his London home.
Kinky. Mm. An old article from Bikini Magazine, why don't I get that anymore, was recently discovered in which actress Christina Applegate said she and a gal pal took part in a Las Vegas ceremony many years ago in order to prove a point about gay marriage. The article said that their relationship was non-sexual.
Is she married then? Is that what's going on? Not too long after the puppy debacle, beloved lesbian talk show host Ellen DeGeneres appears to be in some hot water for continuing to put out new episodes of The Ellen DeGeneres Show while its Writers Guild of America employees are out on strike. Members of the Writers Guild of America East plan to picket outside the show's studio.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Hello, everybody. This is Cherry Jones, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
It's a big gay contest and you could win. All you have to do is enter. Top prize, American Airlines tickets for two, good for travel in the U.S. 48, Bermuda, Bahamas, Mexico, Canada, or the Caribbean. Second prize, VIP theater package to Altar Boys with t-shirts and a meet and greet for you and three friends. And third place, a CD extravaganza of great recording artists. To enter, just email promotions@windycitymediagroup.com and list your top three gay entertainers of all time and include your name and phone number. In the subject of the email, put the word contest. That's it. Join our year-end big gay contest. You might be a winner.
Drawing to be held January 1st, 2008 by random drawing. Winners will be notified.
Hey, Harvey, hey, Harvey, look around. Please don't award show is completely camp. Hey, Harvey, welcome to the Tonys.
Hey, people, welcome to the Tonys. It's so ho, ho, homo. Straight people turn it off.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah.
Hey, Harvey, take my hand.
Big obnoxious drag queens are now in demand.
Hey, Harvey, burn your pants.
Voters love a fellow who can strut and dress.
Every talented team is applauded.
But you gotta be fruity to win the prize.
This is where every weirdo is lauded.
So we gotta find some famous cute straight guys.
Hey, Harvey, welcome to Hugh Jackman.
I'm the host, you know. Hey, but don't give me any flack, man. I am straight, not homo. Please meet my lovely wife.
What?
Yes, I'd like to introduce my wife, sitting right there, Deborah Lee Furness. Hello, darling. Welcome to producers who dust off their shelves to make room for awards they give to themselves. Welcome to directors who direct the few in a show so obscure no one has a clue.
Channing as a
basic. Sounds like a dummy, but the ratings soar.
Then I sing a dolly tune and ratings end up lower.
You can shake a shimmy while I shake my fat.
I could hang while you bang, you could rap while I flap. Are you down with this?
Burn! Yeah! Hey Carol, look at me.
You're the weirdest drag queen no one wants to see.
Hey Harvey, there's my wife. She's my loving partner in my hetero life.
So that's why she was straight for your married.
And Republican man better shed your
name. These award shows are not very varied.
And who gives a damn who wins best play?
Hey people, welcome to the Tonys. No one wants to go. Hey people, welcome to the Tonys. Ratings are so low. Straight people, turn it off.
Well, welcome to Forbidden Broadway Special Victims Unit. It has been called the fastest, funniest 90 minutes in Chicago. And with its long history of spoofing the best and worst of Broadway's brightest stars and shows, Forbidden Broadway has been delighting audiences for over 25 years. The show's been playing in Chicago now at the Royal George Theater to sold-out crowds. I went last night and got to watch all of these fast, costume-changing, hard-working foursome, probably the hardest-working foursome in the theater in Chicago, McKinley Carter,
hello.
Michael Mahler,
hello.
Kevin McGlynn, and Holly Stouter, as in Chowder.
Yes!
Yeah!
It's actually Kevin B. McGlynn.
Oh, Kevin B. McGlynn for all of the...
Yes. The B stands for pretentious.
Ah!
Let it be.
Or for bullshit.
Oh.
I hope. Exactly. I hope. I've known you so short a time, and in dresses and out of dresses, but it's good. It's good. And the lovely Linda on the piano, thank you for playing for us for the podcast. Well, this... I'm glad that you all did this Welcome to the Tonys number, because... you know, being a queer and watching the Tonys since I was, you know, a rugrat, you know. I mean, it's just, it's become laughable that it's just the gayest disaster ever known to man that happens annually. I love that you're mocking the ultimate gay awards show with Hugh Jackman and Harvey Fierstein and the like. Did you have particular fond memories of the Tonys yourselves as singers? I mean, you have to kind of bring your passion of theater to this show to spoof something and mock what you love. McKinley?
That is true. No, I was always practicing my speech.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How's it go?
I still do. I thank my my inspirations like Meryl Streep and I'm sure other people who I can't think of.
Who are more original?
who sing a little bit more than Meryl.
Yeah,
does.
Right.
Let's put
hey,
it
she's
going
to be in Mamma Mia.
I know, see?
Not Meryl
yeah.
Streep.
And Doubt.
That's right.
So
oh,
she's
yeah.
going to redeem herself with
see,
Doubt.
Right. See, so it still works. I can still use her. I don't have to
I did not
that.
Know they were using Meryl Streep for Doubt.
Well, Cherry oops, did. Maybe I let the cat out of the bag.
Cherry
told me over cocktails after Doubt. So
really?
Are you serious?
The week after she found out.
Hello.
Doubt,
wow.
About Doubt.
Right.
It's all rhyming.
We got to work that into the show somehow.
Well.
Wow.
Poor Cherry.
Maybe wait. She's okay.
She
has a few Tonys of her own, so she's good.
She's doing all right.
How about you? Do you have fine Tony moment memories?
I have two Tony stories that I'll tell you, and I know I'm not known for my stories, but...
This is Kevin B. McGlynn speaking.
When I was about 15, I had my deviated septum fixed, and I was in the hospital. My mother worked in the hospital.
I haven't had mine fixed, which is why I sound like this today.
Well, they it was the same night as one of the baseball playoffs, and I said to my mother, you better make sure. I went in on a Sunday night and had surgery on Monday. I said, you better make sure there's a television in my room, and it's working. And they all said to my mother, oh, big baseball fan? And she was like, no. The Tony
Awards. That's great.
The other one, 1983, Harvey Fierstein accepted the for Torch Song Trilogy and thanked his boyfriend on national TV. And I remember being so freaked out and excited, and like I was sitting with my mother watching it and nervous. And that summer I went to New York for the first time. I was going to see my first Broadway show, which is Dreamgirls. I was walking across the street with my friend Tommy. And two people were holding hands, and I couldn't get by, so I walked around them, and I turned around and looked, and it was Harvey Fierstein, his boyfriend.
Wow.
And I started, like, I was shaking, and I said, Tommy, I said, oh, my God, it's Harvey Fierstein right behind us. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yes. He goes, did you hear him talk? And I said, yes, it's Harvey Fierstein. So we stopped, and we waited, and my friend Tommy said, excuse me, are you Harvey Fierstein? He said, no, I'm his sister.
That's a good moment.
Yeah,
you can't top that. But Michael, go give us one.
Try.
Oh no, I
try, Michael. Try.
I can't. All I can say is, I totally remember the Tony Awards where Hugh Jackman did that whole "I can't dance, don't ask me" thing, and thinking it was the most ridiculous thing I ever saw on TV. And now I kind of get to recreate it every night.
So yeah, provides inspiration.
Good. Yeah, exactly.
It's how nice. About you, Miss Holly?
Well, the Tonys are my way of catching up.
Uh-huh.
Because I watch them and go, oh, yeah, that's going on now, isn't it?
Right.
Must have missed that. What time of the year are they usually
June.
On?
June. Yeah,
so I'm trying to figure out what big baseball playoffs were going on in June that were on at the same time as the Tonys.
I don't know. It was some.
Did you miss
you
them?
Don't ask,
it was just
don't
a big
ask
game.
No.
Something with balls. I don't know.
Okay.
We don't know. We don't know.
I'm sure it wasn't basketball.
Well, maybe it was.
So that's the thing. Like last night in watching this, I thought for theater-going audiences, you know, do that they probably get even the more obscure references like Light in the Piazza and some shows mm-hmm. that you know the avid mm-hmm. theater goers get. But do you think most of your audiences follow you through all of them? Are they theater goers who are coming into the audience? And can you tell when people kind of are hooking into
the
show?
You can tell when people have seen the show
uh-huh.
because there's often a big response to certain things. But a lot of people have said, "Oh, I didn't see that, but what you're doing is so funny that it." They kind of go along with it being a big joke.
Right.
A lot of the
reasons they do spoof it are self-explanatory in, you mm-hmm. know, within the number. So mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to have seen the show, but
right.
you can absolutely tell when people have seen the show because the little idiosyncrasies, they just, you know, go crazy.
Like
over.
Somebody mm-hmm. said the other day, we were doing Jersey Boys before it came to town, and we've noticed a difference.
Oh, definitely.
Just from since the show
really?
Was opened, that, oh, and you can hear people talking, oh, we saw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah.
you know.
Well, you know, like the Les Miserables section is kind of the chestnut of the show. I mean, everybody
yes.
in this audience was like poking everybody
and
going,
Fanta.
They're doing the march, they're doing the march, or they're doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
Or, oh, remember they had that tape? Like, everybody's seen that yeah. show, and I guess you kind of can feel that collective
yeah.
that collective mm-hmm. energy.
Well, Les Mis is just so iconic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like it's just it's sort of ripe for parody because it takes itself so seriously.
Yeah. And you all have such wonderful moments in that. I want to go back just to people who may not know where this entire inspiration of parodying, lampooning theater started, and I don't care who really answers this, but where did the idea of Forbidden Broadway originate? As a concept.
Whoa.
Kevin? Since you are more veteran, Kevin's been doing...
Senior member.
Well, we should say Kevin's been doing the show for 11 years,
yes.
off and on. And,
correct.
And so you're here in Chicago with this production.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, you know...
Gerard Alessandrini, who wrote, created, directed the show, was an actor moving to New York and could not find work for himself. And also when he was growing up, his family was very much into music, and they always played the classical music in his house, and Broadway was forbidden to be played in the house. Mm. And then when he moved to New York and tried to get a job, there was a joke among his friends that Broadway was forbidden to them because nobody could get a job on Broadway. So as just a little outlet, he used to write these parodies for friends at parties, and they would perform them. And once they sort of amassed, he put a little evening together for... I believe it was just him and one other person initially. And some people came to see it and said, this should be expanded into a mm-hmm. show. And they did it with four people. and they did it at Paulson's, I believe, in New York for the first time, and it got a rave review, and now it's the 25th year that the show has been in existence.
And he received a special Tony for this.
He received
show.
A special Tony Award for it, yes, absolutely.
That's pretty, I mean, obviously the community loves laughing at themselves and knows when a show's a flop, and it kind of eases the tension, I think, of the business to be able to call a spade a spade.
Oh, I just love hearing the stories about the performers who, like, love to come see, you know, what they're doing to them now, you know what I mean? Like Carol, like Carol Channing,
who were, like... She's a huge fan of the show. She's, I mean, she comes to every single edition. They just had the whole cast of Grey Gardens come.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
in New York, and Christine Ebersole, and she was on BroadwayWorld.com, whatever the... I don't have a computer. picture with her, the girl, my friend Janet Dickinson, who does the show in New York. You know, they took the picture together, and a lot of people come to see their parodies. I know all the Light in the Piazza people came to see when that show was done, but some people I don't think are, you know,
receptive.
Can't laugh at themselves. Yeah. I don't think Glenn Close.
And we don't like those people.
Too funny when they do her number. Yeah.
Oh, Glenn.
But then there's like the stories about like Stephen Sondheim, who like was like, this needs to be meaner. when they were making fun of his lyrics.
Really?
They're like, he wrote him a note saying like, be meaner to me.
Sondheim comes all the time to the show. Stephen Schwartz. I mean, a lot of the composers come too.
Well, and I wonder
they come
too.
To steal things.
Which is you all obviously reference with Spamalot. I mean that. They're making kind of a living. Obviously, they were making a living off spoofing their own genre of film. And
well, I think that whole end of the number comes from when the show was reviewed in New York and originally opened. Two of the reviews said, the show is good, but Forbidden Broadway's been doing this for longer and better.
Oh, wow.
So that's why I think that, you know, he did that they stole it from us.
You know, In researching, I was seeing that the show has been, obviously in New York where it started, but it's been to London. You wonder kind of what the British, do they eviscerate even more? Are they much more biting when their tabloids are so cruel, you know? Or in Vegas where everything's a little more technicolor. Have you had a sense of kind of how Chicago is seen in terms of audience and the cast here? And do each one of them have a different personality in a way? Can you be rougher, I guess I'm asking, in London? Can you, do people let poke less, you know, like to be poked less fun at in L.A.?
Well, I know, I did it in San Diego 2 years ago, and they asked us not to say Jesus Christ in the Spamalot number.
Uh-huh.
And the puppets in the puppet number... weren't as graphically sexual as they had been in the past.
They're not that graphically sexual.
No,
they had to clean that up here too.
Yeah, but I do get to yell Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
But they
and we get to swear.
Yeah,
but so there. I mean, definitely in New York, there are no holds barred. Yeah. But I think around the country, depending upon the community, because I think they felt like San Diego was a very sort of Christian.
Yeah.
Area, so they wanted us not to
Catholic.
Yeah.
So what about the changes? Like, have you had a lot of changes, McKinley? I mean, does the show change from time to time and month to month?
Not in the time that we've been here. Other than we did have a very big change, and that's when Robert Goulet passed away. And actually, when he first became sick, they immediately called from New York and said, "Can we put a different number in?" There used to be one in the place of Man of La Mancha number, that was the Robert Goulet number, making fun of him.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
Too soon.
Yeah, exactly, which is very wise on their part. It's too bad because Kevin did a fantastic job with it, and we miss hearing it, but at the same time, you have to respect.
They seem to like La Mancha quite a bit
they
last
do.
Night.
Sure.
So,
they do.
I mean, it's nice because it is this living, breathing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's what theater is, but the fact that this has the facility to change and comment on what's going on. I mean, obviously, if you heard somebody new was popping into a show that is in the repertoire of songs, they would probably call you and put a number back in or change a little bit of a number. Mm-hmm. As you say, you have to take a number out.
Well, yeah, and they have plenty of material to draw from. Yes. I mean, they've been doing it for 25 years.
So I want to ask about kind of... playing some of these Broadway heavies. And Holly, I felt like you had a tall order last night. I really did. I mean, the gay boys are going to love you, girl.
Yeah.
you are pulling out the Channing, which we heard you do in the opening number, the Liza, the Merman. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did you have to do? Were you watching these women? Did you feel like you had a facility to conjure these women before you got cast in the show?
For Ethel, yes, because I'm naturally a loud belter.
But there's still a merman-esque-ness.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
People can
belt
well.
You know, I did have a lot of direction with that. Mark, who helped teach the show, and Lisa, who helped teach the show, who have also been in the cast, Mark Kaplan and Lisa Mather, they had a lot of ideas and a lot of different takes and just a lot of very helpful suggestions for all of those characters. And then when John, our director, came in, he was able to really be more specific and it just kind of grew from there. I mean, at one point, I remember getting a whole lot of information from a whole lot of people, and I just went, okay, you guys, I got to take this away and work on it. And Mark also emailed me a whole bunch of clips of Liza and Channing that some of them had been spliced together, phone conversations with Larry King. And so I just watched a bunch of them over and over again.
Yeah.
And just kind of did it from there. And there are nights when I come off stage and I'm like, okay, that didn't happen.
Right.
No, that wasn't right tonight. It's often with Liza that happens. So I don't know what
Well,
that
Liza's
was.
Not right some nights, so well, it's okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a hardest moment in the show for you or a hardest thing that is challenging? I mean, it could be a costume change. There's as much going on behind.
Oh, yeah. The hardest part, I think, is when we're... we literally are changing costume while we're doing other things. Like, I have to, like, take my pants and shirt off while I'm doing the Beauty and the Beast hand backstage.
Right.
And then I have to, or Kevin and I are singing the Jersey Boys backups off stage while we're changing into our Jersey Boys costumes. So it's a madhouse back there. But Carissa, our costume girl, is really great about kind of
You only have one back
yeah,
there?
We have one.
Oh, my Lord. How many arms and legs does she have?
So we help each other out. Actually, that's my favorite part of the show, is when I have to take Kevin out of his Harvey Fierstein dress. That's part of my track.
Wow. Now that's sexy. We will have webcam of that later. We'll have webcam on this podcast.
So they really could put a camera backstage because it's like a well-oiled machine.
Sure.
She's got everything set at the top of the show, and we now have a routine.
But it has to be so the audience can just enjoy it. Like, we don't feel any of your stress, and yet I know, having been actually in this facility doing a similar type of show, that you know, it's there's a lot going on back there, and I never felt at the moment like, oh my God, there.
Sometimes there's another show going on backstage while there's a show going on.
Sometimes new lyrics are added.
Lyrics are added. There's a parody on stage and a parody off stage. Like, Holly, do you want to tell them every
night?
Often
involving the Harvey Fierstein. Well, the theater was broken into on Halloween.
Ah.
And they stole the Harvey Fierstein dress.
You are kidding me!
It was found
upstairs. It's a gay Avenger, I'm telling you.
Ripped to shreds. Yeah.
It was what? Ripped to shreds?
It was ripped.
It was torn off the fat, because there's a fat suit, and it was torn. Because that's not my body.
Horrified.
It was torn off the fat suit.
It's a hate crime.
And so every night while
he's
standing
in the mirror fixing his eyelashes,
and Holly will say,
and the real words are, hey Harvey, look around.
So I go,
hey Harvey, look around. Someone robbed theater and stole your gown.
This is every night while I'm trying to get into character.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to focus.
Well, I'm sure none of this silliness is ensuing downtown, where you all are spoofing two of the big shows in town that have kind of, I think, led the way to allowing Forbidden Broadway to be resonant here. You know, I feel like what has happened in kind of the commercial theater scene in Chicago has allowed more productions to come in. And this one, I think, is a real obvious example last night while I was watching of, you know, the audiences are getting to see more in their own city, and then they can come and they can make fun of it. And they're smart, and they are going to. A lot of theater in this city. If you live in this theater, and that's something you enjoy doing. But Wicked and Jersey Boys is something that you both tackle. And I wondered if on the way out you would just give us a little bit of the Jersey Boys, your rendition, the Forbidden Broadway Special Victims Unit rendition. I do need to say the show is playing now through January 13th at present time. I hope that this show extends. It was a full house when I was here, but run and get your tickets. The Royal George Theater is in Chicago, right on Halstead Street at Halstead and North Avenue. For tickets and information, go to Ticketmaster.com. Or, hey, you can catch this show in many other cities. A new version is playing right now in New York, the Forbidden Broadway Rude Awakening. So if you're listening and not in Chicago, come to Chicago and see this production, or check out Forbidden Broadway if it comes to a town near you. And Linda, play us out with the Little Jersey Boys.
Ooh-wee-oo.
We've all been dumbed down.
If this passes as a play,
dumbed down
by the stupid laggy
hands
of the jukebox trend today and their flashy designs.
Scary.
That's right.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.